The next matter on for our oral argument this morning is case number A180853, and that's Pace versus Commissioner of Public Safety. Welcome, counsel. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes of time for the appellant's counsel. You may use that time for rebuttal. Those restrictions are indicated in the light and the clock in the lectern. And the lectern, by the way, has a button right in front. You can raise and lower it to your height, to your convenience. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument so we can keep track of who's making which argument in our audio recording of the proceedings. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are squared away, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning or good afternoon. I know we're close here, but may it please the court, my name is Rod Sheet. I represent Mr. Pace, who's the appellant in this matter. This, of course, revolves around a notice and order of revocation issued after a DUI arrest. My experience in looking at these notice and orders of revocation, generally, I think the defense attorney looks at a few different things. You know, whether the notice was issued immediately, at least with respect to a breath test failure, whether it includes a 7-day temporary license, whether it contains the required administrative and judicial review, and whether it expresses the precise length of the revocation. And none of those things occurred in this particular case. With respect to the 7-day temporary license that Mr. Pace was not able to obtain as a result of that notice being mailed, the respondent in the trial court essentially have stated that if we sort of ignore the immediacy requirement in the statute, you can sort of talk about the 7 days of notice and 7 days of temporary license being different things. But the law doesn't really seek to sort of divide and conquer like that. The statutory provision pertaining to breath tests provides for a notice that is itself, in and of itself, a 7-day temporary license. If we look at the notice and order in this case, it actually says, quote, this entire notice is valid as a temporary driver's license from the date shown for 7 days, end quote. And as recognized in the Gray case that was recently published by this court, the procedure for the officer in issuing a notice in order of revocation is to clip the upper corner of the driver's license and give it to the person. Give the individual a 7-day temporary license. That's what this court said in Gray. The officer in this case recognized that mistake and took responsibility for it. I prevented a 7-day temporary license. So the trial court's ruling in this case actually tracks respondent's brief. The main contention is that Williams rejects this published case, Williams from 2013, rejects a 7-day temporary license for everyone. But on the contrary, Williams said that these are different situations. That case involved a fluid test at the BCA. Of course, the revocation has to be mailed out. Williams distinguished those two situations and said that when it's mailed out, statute doesn't require the 7-day temporary license. But in the case of a breath test, Williams made several references to the fact that that is a different situation and that the revocation becomes effective 7 days after receipt of the notice, which again is in and of itself the 7-day temporary license. And Williams indicated in that case, the breath test scenario is a decidedly different situation. It's important to remember that Williams actually said that with respect to the statute, but under the umbrella of the due process issue, the statement was decidedly different under the due process analysis.
So, but don't we really have to look at harm, you know, either way? I mean, certainly under procedural due process, you need that kind of direct and personal harm. And where is the harm to your client who, as I understand it, and you'll correct me, knowing the record better than I do if I'm wrong, that he was able to drive for a couple of these intervening months before he was mailed the revocation notice. I mean, so what's the harm to him that wasn't just the harm that anyone whose driver's license is being revoked is going to suffer?
Right. Well, I think Williams indicated that, look, the 7-day temporary license, if you're entitled to one, One day of it is illegally...
And that's what I'm trying to get at. Where's that one day? What was the one day your client couldn't drive?
If you're entitled to a 7-day temporary license between the time you get notice and the time you're actually effectively revoked, the statute refers to that as a temporary license for 7 days, right? So that should have occurred between May 8th, if you're allowed to delay the revocation, and we don't submit that a police officer can do that. This was 3 months after the breath test failure. But assuming you can delay 3 months and then send it out, well, it would be the prejudice would be between May 8th and May 11th, because if the officer would have handed it to him, here's a temporary license for 7 days, and you've got time to brace for the revocation. You have the statutory 7 days. So to have this 3 or 4 days when you're entitled to seven, that's the harm that takes place. And I think Williams recognizes that. I don't think I actually know that Williams recognizes that. But again, in Williams, the court said, well, if it's mailed out in the case of a fluid test, you know, that person is sort of contemplating that there's a laboratory test that might take some time, and so they might get revoked. They've got a lot of time, as the court refers to it, to sort of brace for the revocation. That's not what happened here. Mr. Pace failed a breath test, apparently 0.09, right? 3 months previous. The officer did not clip the license. What message is that sending Mr. Pace? You're good to go. This was on an ATV. It doesn't revoke your driver's license. That's the legal mistake in the case. And that legal mistake.
How is that harmful to your client? I mean, doesn't that just give him some extra time before his license ultimately is revoked to drive?
I'm not so concerned with the question is, you know, we wouldn't have a 7-day temporary license if it didn't result in a benefit to somebody, right? It's part of the due process protections that people have in Hedden v. Dirkswager, and it's been talked about in multiple cases since that time. So I know there's this sort of theoretical difference between, well, is it notice? Is it actually a 7-day temporary license where you can actually drive? It is sort of a bit of both. It's referred to both. At least in the case of, I don't think into the semantics of blood, you know, laboratory testing and how notice and the 7 days works out in that particular case. But in a breath test failure, the law says revoke the license immediately, give the person a 7-day temporary license. And in fact, in the criminal case that we cited, the fact that you immediately revoke, that's when the revocation takes effect. It actually doesn't take effect in 7 days, because the state could prosecute you for a future DWI even within the 7 days, because the revocation is supposed to begin immediately, right?
So I just want to make sure I'm looking at the same thing you are. So I'm looking at Minnesota Statute 169A.52, Subdivision 6, where it talks about notice of revocation or disqualification.
Correct.
Right. But I read that to say the revocation becomes effective at the time the commissioner notifies the person of the intent to revoke.
Correct.
So how does that fit with your argument? It has to be immediate.
The revocation, 6 and 7, subdivision 6 and 7 are read together. And that's the part of the case I just mentioned. It was a criminal case. But they said that these subdivisions have to be read together. And since I think it's subdivision 7 that maybe refers to the immediate part, that's why they have to be read together as a mandate that the revocation is immediate in a breath test. And these cases like Williams, I don't think they got into the sort of semantics of whether, you know, someone's 7-day temporary license isn't a benefit. I look at the 7-day temporary license, and that's what it's referred to, as a benefit to folks who are being revoked, that it actually gives them some time to be able to get their affairs in order. Mr. Pace here testified he really couldn't get his affairs in order. Had he had 7 days, he probably wouldn't have needed to let his employer know about that. So the time between May 8th and May 11th, 10th or 11th, was the harm that he suffered in this case. And I think Williams clearly indicates that that's a legally cognizable harm. It's just something that the statute didn't protect in the case of blood and urine testing. So the remedy for that is rescission. We have all kinds of statutory errors here. We can talk about the fact that the notice didn't contain the rights of administrative and or judicial review. The court doesn't.
So, Mr. Sheeta, in what authority says that the remedy is rescission?
Well, I look to the court's recent decision in Gray, The court said that, yeah, this fact that that issue was also raised in Gray, that this fellow was mailed, this Iowa citizen was mailed the notice. And I'm not sure if it contained, I don't think it contained the notice of administrative and judicial review. But there's no discussion of prejudice or anything like that in that case. The court just said, well, Mr. Gray left the notice on the table before he left for Iowa, apparently. And so he wasn't able to carry the burden of the insufficient evidence if he had a burden. But it was sort of a credibility dispute between the officer and and Mr. Gray. And so I would cite to Gray, this court's analysis in Gray, to say that, yeah, the notice is important. I mean, let's face it, if there's no judicial information about review or administrative review,
does Gray answer the question that Judge Johnson is posing, which is your authority for rescission as the remedy?
I think it was just a sort of a credibility dispute. Ultimately, they said that he got the notice, and therefore the remedy, as I recall in Gray, wasn't discussed. I think it maybe said something like, Gray, I think the decision did indicate that he argues the remedy was rescission, but we're not prepared to go to that point.
So what's the authority for rescission as the remedy? Is there some statutory basis for that assertion? Is there a case that stands for that proposition? Even if you, assuming that we agreed with your argument, why would we agree with your remedy? What's the basis for that?
Well, I would go back to potentially the LeClaire case that's cited in the brief, indicating that it was an issue in that case. But again, unfortunately, the court said that initially the person received a notice, even though the second notice didn't contain the information. So that's good enough.
So are you saying there is no case and there is no statute that stands for the proposition that rescission's the remedy for the harms that you are asserting?
I'm not sure that there's a case that says one way or the other, either way, correct, what the proper remedy is. I'm just suggesting that if someone's not getting notice, we have to be worried about that, not from just Mr. Pace's standpoint, but what is the fallout from that we don't put that information on the back of the notice anymore, and then the 80% of the people that don't get to court, that's okay, but the 20% that do get to court, we say that they've cured their own harm, their own prejudice, or because they ended up in court?
Well, that argument goes to whether there is a violation or a failure to meet the statute. But my question was going to what is the responsibility of the court or the commissioner as a remedy to the harm that you have asserted?
Well, I pointed out, because I don't have case law, and I don't think either party has case law on that issue that you talk about, there being a remedy. But I would point to
So explain why rescission is the appropriate, there being no authority to mandate it, why would that be a just remedy?
It would be a just remedy for, as I pointed out, to protect future drivers. I think there would be incentive potentially for the...
For your client. I'm talking about your client, not what it might do to change the process.
I don't think there is actual prejudice to Mr. Pace. But I do think that information is important. It should be in the document. If it's not in the document, I don't know that we necessarily have to show harm when we look at the Minnesota Constitution. I think that the remedy there is when there's a statutory issue.
So if you haven't shown harm or prejudice, why would it be just to undo the revocation?
Well, it would be due process is involved in simple fundamental fairness to individuals. And so I think that would be the cornerstone of
right, but often in due process cases, I think it's pretty much black letter law that if someone alleges they didn't get the process they were due, the remedy is to go back and give them the process they were due, not to undo the conclusion of necessarily of the proceeding if that isn't necessarily what is the result or that the harm didn't come from that. So I still don't know why rescission is the answer, assuming that we agreed with the premises.
Like I said, I don't know that there's necessarily precedent going one way or the other on that topic.
So if I can ask you, because I think there was a violation of statutes and that was also a violation of due process. With due process, it seems pretty clear to me, we got to have that direct and personal harm. I hear you saying, yes, but under the statutory violations, shouldn't there be some remedy, even if there's no harm to your client.
Correct.
Are we tracking so far? Okay. One of the things I'd like you to address is that, so the state says, look, these statutes, they are directory. They're not mandatory. Could you please address that? Because, I mean, I read these and say, yeah, it would be better to absolutely immediately revoke his license, but if he didn't, but is a violation of doing that mean rescission? It's just another way to get to the, what's the remedy?
Well, I think as far as the directory mandatory, there's obviously case law on this point. I don't think we want to put this in the hands of the police officer, that it's sort of directory upon you. Use your discretion as to whether to grant someone this seven-day temporary license, for example. That's clearly in the statute. Here's what you need to do, step A, B, and C. That's not a directory type issue about how courts might decide cases or how much time they might have to decide cases like we cited in our brief. That goes to folks, individuals' substantive rights, and therefore that should be mandatory. And there's harm there, and the state constitution calls for a remedy on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cheetah. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal time. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. Brian Mern from the Minnesota Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Commissioner of Public Safety. At the outset, I want to address a couple of the questions that were asked by your honors. Specifically, there was some discussion about where is the one day as far as the one day that was actually not received as part of the temporary license. Here, the appellant did receive the 7 days to drive. In fact, he actually received closer to 3 months to drive. The question really is whether the notice, and the notice is at most 4 days before the 7 days expired. And more importantly for that, for the procedural due process, the appellant's attorney was also asked, don't we have to look at the harm? You know, where is the harm? And here, the court found that there was no harm. As part of the analysis in the first case, or the first hearing as well as the second hearing, specifically with the harm for the missing back page that was discussed for the notice and order of revocation, the district court correctly concluded in both orders, quote, did not suffer any direct and personal harm for failure to include the reinstatement procedure and the appeal procedure with his notice of revocation, close quote. And that's at ADD 3, paragraph 15, and ADD 9, paragraph 3, because there were two separate orders in this case. As far as the less than 7 day notice of the temp license, the court also ruled on that. The district court noted that, quote, the less than 7 day notice of his temporary driving privileges does not rise to the level of hardship. And then later says, the lack of the 7 day notice of the temporary license is not a procedural due process error. And that's at ADD 4 at paragraph 19. As far as Gray, the Gray case does not stand for the proposition that rescission is appropriate. I think that we got there. There was some reference to a criminal case.
Does Gray say anything about the remedy?
Your Honor, I don't recall specifically what the remedy was there. I believe the commissioner actually prevailed and that it was a credibility determination. And one other thing that came up with the questions I wanted to discuss was there was a question about the directory or mandatory issue with the statutory construction. We obviously argued in our brief, and we continue to argue that they were directory and not mandatory. But there was also, opposing counsel had mentioned that it shouldn't be on the police or the officer. One significant fact that is different here, if you review the record, it talks about the fact that the deputy himself had mistakenly believed that he should not issue the revocation because this was an ATV and the prior that he knew about was over 10 years old. So in this case, it wasn't up to the officer's discretion. It was more on DPS or DVS. He couldn't recall who it was. The Department of Public Safety or Department of Vehicle Services informed him that he should issue the revocation, and that's why he did so by mail as directed. So, appellant asserts that the district court erred and that there are essentially three alleged defects, and that the court erred in not finding that there was a statutory or procedural due process error. The three issues are: the notice of order of revocation referred to a back page. Specifically, it stated reinstatement of driving privileges. Reinstatement of driving privileges or appeal of revocation was on the back page. There was no back page provided. The second issue is that the notice of order of revocation was mailed rather than immediately served following the breath test. And the third issue is the issue that we just discussed about the 4 days notice, four or possibly five, based on receiving the temporary license by mail. The district court properly rejected those arguments and sustained the revocation, not once, but also again when the appellant district court moved for new findings of fact and a new trial. The court will be analyzing the statutory issues, which talk about the directory or mandatory, as well as the statutes themselves. But I also wanted to briefly cover the procedural due process claim here. The appellant's attorney had indicated that there was no prejudice, so I think there will be some trouble as far as overcoming the procedural due process claim, but the court will be using the three-part test from Matthews, which was adopted in Hedden versus Zirkzwanger. The first part of the test is broken into three subparts. The test itself focuses on the private interest that's affected by the official action, the risk of erroneous deprivation in that interest, and the government's interest. That first part, the private interest, is also broken into three parts as provided by Mackey and adopted and used in the Hedden case as well. That focuses on the duration of the revocation, the availability of hardship relief, and the availability of prompt post-revocation review. And applying that, the district court correctly concluded that the due process claims here weigh in favor of the commissioner. The appellant's statutory rights were not violated. Appellant received sufficient notice. Here, the court referred to it as adequate notice. The reason I use sufficient notice is the court should refer to LeClaire versus Commissioner of Public Safety, which was discussed by appellant's attorney. In that case, this court upheld an amended order, notice and order of revocation, where the amended notice did not advise of a right to judicial or administrative review.
So, counsel, I understand your argument on the violation of procedural due process, not with at the harm to appellant. However, when we look at the statute, this wasn't just like one mistake here, you know, or one mistake in another case. You've got, you know, didn't invite some of the rights to administrative and judicial review. That is pretty fundamental mistake. You know, didn't immediately revoke his license. Another mistake. I think what appellant's counsel is saying, when you make that many mistakes, shouldn't someone be responsible? Don't we want the state to be more careful instead of excusing not just one, but several things that went wrong here? Could you address that just on the statutory basis? I understand the due process, there's not prejudice.
Your Honor, as far as the statutory basis goes, as we discussed previously, the statute itself is directory, not mandatory.
So we have to reach that.
I think there's additionally.
Do we want to say it's just directory to give people the notice of their rights to judicial review and administrative review? I mean, is that the message we want to send?
I think the issue here is that The notice itself said, see back of notice for information regarding reinstatement of driving privilege or appeal of this revocation. And that, as the your honors had discussed earlier, there was, this is for procedural due process, or, well, we're dealing with the statutory, but he had his right. They did have an implied consent hearing in this matter. The fact that, I'll deal with your second point first, that it didn't include the revocate, you know, it didn't correspond with the statute. I would argue that under subdivision 6, which the court, the district court had found that we could operate under subdivision 6, there is no requirement that this is the way that a breath test must be done as far as handing immediately. There's no language about the breath test in that. You know, so I would not say that that was done incorrectly. It wasn't the normal fashion. Typically, when there's a failed breath test, they hand them the notice and order of revocation, but we had the mistake here. As far as the administrative and judicial review notice, there is no harm here because they filed for judicial review immediately, and or June 5th is the date on the petition itself when they filed for judicial review. The administrative review can be filed for at any point in time, and it still hasn't been filed for as far as the administrative review there. So if there was a proper remedy here, the proper remedy for the statutory violation, I would argue, is that they would have had additional time to file if he had not filed, maybe beyond that time period. But revocation is not provided for in the statute or any of the cases. And here, if we go back to the LeClerc case, there was adequate notice. In that case, you had a urine test. It was not sufficient. A sample is what the officer mistakenly believed, and the commissioner amended the NOR, or the notice of order of revocation, to test failure, and no notice of judicial or administrative review was provided at all. Here we at least have the C-back of the notice for information regarding reinstatement of driving privileges or appeal of this revocation. So
when we get to the, counsel, if I may ask you a question about the harm, because I recognize that at one point appellant's counsel said his client didn't suffer actual prejudice, but another point I do recall him saying, as far as the 7-day temporary license and the notice issues, to say, look, he had less time to get his affairs in order before the, I assume before the, you know, instead of having 7 days, it was 4 days. Could you address that argument as far as potential prejudice as well?
Your Honor, I think I would look to the district court that found that the prejudice was either outweighed or that it wasn't, he wasn't harmed. But I would also look to the fact that in this case, because it was a mailed notice and order of revocation under subdivision 6, appellant's counsel indicated that there's some cases, I believe it was Williams, where, you know, under subdivision 6, there's no requirement for a temporary 7-day license. So arguably, we could be under the same situation where he's not even entitled to the license. And additionally, he received 4 days notice of the 7-day license, but he had from February 18th through May 15th, when his license expired, to get his affairs in order. And if you go also into the harm and you look at the transcript, his testimony specifically related to getting rides in order, maybe not attending things after work, and the court made a determination that that wasn't sufficient harm. And I think along with that point, if you look at subdivision 6, one thing I wanted to mention is a revocation under this section becomes, and then later on it says, becomes effective at the time the commissioner or peace officer acting on behalf of the commissioner notifies the person of the intention to revoke or disqualify. One of the focuses here has to be at the time. A lot of these cases deal with, they may deal with a urine test or a blood test, but the court's analysis is focused on at the time or the immediacy of delivery, and in this case, they opted to do it under subdivision 6. I would direct the court to the unpublished decision from this court of Rich versus Commissioner of Public Safety, where the court stated in plain language that the statute doesn't require a 7-day notice where it was mailed. I see that my time is almost up. Appellant doesn't provide any information that would allow them to overcome the statutory or the procedural due process claims, and the court was correct in its decision. We would ask that this court affirm the lower court's decision in that matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murn. Mr. Cheetah, any rebuttal?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. Rod Cheetah again, appearing on behalf of Mr. Pace. So I think I can flush out the harm maybe a little bit better than has been done to point here. I mean, if in fact the officer is supposed to give you the revocation, what would that look like? The officer would have brought it to Mr. Pace on May 11th, right? Because that's when he got it. Wouldn't he be driving on May 16th, May 17th, May 18th? There you've got 3 days that he didn't drive. He couldn't drive as a result of the government's actions. Why should somebody else get the revocation notice right away and be able to drive the next 7 days? And to suggest that this wasn't like some kind of surprise to Mr. Pace, this is a pretty big surprise. So when we talk about the mailing that occurred in Williams, this case is a lot different than Williams. First, the officer in this case testified that the mailing doesn't work because the notice that was used, and if we look at it, has a place for a signature, right? He says, he types in not present to sign, or there's a place refused to sign. Right? So that's clearly not something that's supposed to be mailed. The form is consistent with the law, just not in the practice of the officer in this particular case. It also says, do not issue for blood or urine tests. Why? Because as Williams tells us, that's supposed to be mailed out. So, and second, Williams says this is a decidedly different case than a breath test. If that's the case, then my argument is correct, right? If you're supposed to get the revocation notice from the officer, that means you'll be driving for the next 7 days. So perhaps the officer in this case should have driven out to Mr. Pace's home since it was his mistake and hand him the notice. There's nothing in the statute that says you get to mail it for a breath test failure. You're supposed to give it to him. And if he had done that, he'd be driving May 16, May 17, and May 18. Thirdly, Williams is different because the commissioner argued in Williams that case is different. And it's brief, again, and what we're precisely arguing today is that there are different rules for service of the notice of order of revocation for police officers and the Department of Public Safety. And so this argument that Mr. Pace was driving for these few months, no, that's a case where you've got a blood test pending. You don't know what the result's going to be. It could be a surprise to that person as well, but at least they know their blood or urine test is pending, and at some point they might get revoked. Again, what happened here? Mr. Pace failed a breath test 3 months ago. They didn't clip his license as required by law. He's sent on his way. That's an ATV revocation. Don't worry about it. It's not going to revoke your driver's license. At least that's the message, right, when you don't comply with the statute. So this would have been the most surprising revocation ever for somebody that failed a breath test 3 months ago. So that's complete surprise. It should have been given to him in person, and the lack of being able to drive on the 16th, 17th, and 18th is the harm. And again, I think legally, it is a complicated subject to talk about the notice versus the 7 days or whatever, but we talk about this being a procedural protection, right? And if that is a benefit as a de facto matter. And so if you don't get the benefit of the procedural protection, that is prejudice in and of itself, and one day can constitute the harm, and I think that's what multiple cases have said, including Williams, that one day is a legally cognizable harm. And in this case, we should not ignore the seven-day protectable interest, and we shouldn't ignore the cumulative effect of all of the errors in this case. If due process is, in fact, flexible, let's round up the errors that occurred in this case and say that it doesn't pass the test. Thank you.
Could you please address the Rich case? I don't think you've done so yet, but
I think in the brief, we just did a footnote to Rich indicating that it's no more helpful.
Oh, I didn't see that at all. Okay. Well, maybe you could tell me your position, if you could, please.
As I recall, the thing I recall about the Rich case is that it's really no more distinguishable in this case than Williams is, having to do with a fluid test, as I recall. And so the same arguments we made about Williams, I think we can make about Rich. I believe that's the point that I made in the brief. And so Williams is, I believe, the more seminal sort of analysis on the issue before the court. And then ultimately, Gray gets decided, indicating that this breath test situation is different. We're not going to give it to an Iowa resident. And that's a published decision, right? We're not also going to give it to a Minnesota citizen. That's what the commissioner asks for here, and that's not right. Thank you. I'm finished unless there are any further questions.
I think not.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The matter is submitted under advisement. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. And that ends our oral calendar for today, and we are therefore in recess.